Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you. We're going to pretend that it's 9:50 and get started a while. Okay? I would love to know what has been going through your minds as related to this title, Students Becoming Persons. My guess is that some of you thought, well, I all thought they were already persons. What is this class about? Well, there's a certain sense in which this class is a very real extension of what we just heard over in the gym. There's another sense in which I feel this may be one of the most important things that I have to say this weekend. And there's another sense in which I tremble in being able to communicate what's on my heart. So if you'd pray with me, I'd appreciate it. Eternal Father in heaven, we invite you to be present in this class and to direct what is said by your Spirit. May I simply be a channel for what you want to be said. And I ask your presence in the heart of each of these people sitting here. They might be able to hear, understand, and receive the truth that you want them to understand. So we commit this time to you, just asking your presence and your blessing. In Jesus' name, amen. You folks know the story of the ugly duckling. How there was this nest of eggs, and there was this kind of strange, large egg in the nest. And when the eggs hatched, that there was this bigger bird than all the other little babies. And it took the mother bird more effort to feed the big bird. And as the babies were growing, some of these babies were beautiful little ducklings, but there was this strange, awkward, gangling other thing there. And this other thing experienced some kind of rejection. But as time went on, the big, gangly, awkward creature became a, you tell me, swan, which is more beautiful than a duckling. Okay, we've all heard that story. Daryl? I don't know how you feel about that story. I think it resonates with a lot of people because all of us feel somehow out of place. And if my guess is right, some of you are probably feeling, what in the world am I doing a teacher? I feel so inferior, so overwhelmed by all that's being said. How in the world can I be a teacher? Well, I would like this class to put those fears to rest and to, if you can get a hold of what I'm trying to share today, it can be a secret that may unlock the rest of your future. That's how much I believe in this. Now, we're not going to turn to this in our Bibles, but if you would read in 2 Corinthians 3, verses 7 to 18, Apostle Paul is talking there about Jews who have a veil in their hearts. And so that when the scripture is read, they cannot really understand what Moses was prophesying of Jesus, what David was prophesying of Jesus, what the prophets were prophesying of Jesus. There was something there, a veil, that hindered their perceptions. Okay, I'm going to suggest this morning that children have a veil on their hearts when they come into your classroom. Children that have a veil, a heart veil, that's ever less permeable with age. Now, here's why. If you're a teacher, you know that little children are very subject to carnality of their own fallenness, and they put that with peers and peer carnality, and their concern for social standing. And as they get a little older, put rebellion with it and add ignorance to it, and there is a real veil there. Okay? Now, your job, my job as a teacher, is to somehow, with the grace of God, lift that veil. That is a huge challenge. Some children have more veil than others. And I'm always intrigued to find people who don't have a veil over their heart or just have a thin veil. And you can see through the person. They're transparent. All right, what do I mean? So let's define person. Take a look at your hand out there. Who am I? Well, on an objective and a scientific basis, I'm white, Caucasian male. I have graying hair and I have a white beard and I'm about 175 pounds. I'm married to a lady by the name of Barbara. I'm a father of 8 children. I live in LaGrange, Indiana, and I am a teacher. Okay, but that mostly relates to my body. Okay, is that who I am? My body. It's a part of who I am. That's not really who I am. Okay, now let's look on the soul part of me. The subjective and intuitive part of me. I have a personality. I have a character. I have my own ways of thinking. Kyle was asking us to change our ways of thinking. 5 paradigm shifts. I have preferences. I have my convictions. I have my loves that are very much a part of me. I have my fears. I have my goals. I have my delights. And I have my laziness and, you know, everything. But you can't see that stuff. You see my body working out that stuff, but you can't really see that stuff. Okay, that's the soul part of me. But beyond that, I have a spirit that's something you sense about me. It's intangible and it's almost undefinable. Now, what I just said about me is also true about you. But it's then also true about your students. My life was changed as a result of reading something in this book, Reality and Vision. And I'm just going to read something in here that I have reread several times. And this is just a part of, it's a collection of writers, 18 contemporary writers to tell who they read and why. And this particular writer is writing about a man by the name of Paul Turnier. How many of you know that name, recognize Paul Turnier? He's dead and gone. He was more influential in the past than what he is today. So it's not real surprising that you don't know anything about him. But this is not Paul Turnier writing. This is a man who is going to be commenting about him. He says, I knew what I needed. I knew that what I needed personally was a model, someone who was seriously trying to be God's person and have intellectual integrity, but who also faced the kinds of fears, problems, and failures that I faced. Evidently, this was not a combination to be found in a single Christian communicator. People seriously committed to God either did not have the kind of struggles I had or considered them too insignificant to be mentioned. I had met some other strangers who, like me, were trying to slug it out with this paradox, but we were all nobodies. I had never run across a communicator with any authority who admitted to the strange predicament of feeling unable to be whole, in spite of the power and joy to be found in the gospel. And then, in 1965, Dr. Paul Turnier came to Laodicea Lodge in the remote hill country of southwest Texas for a conference. I was the director of the conference center, and although I had heard of Paul Turnier, I had never read anything that he had written. The first evening he spoke, the great hall at the lodge was filled with psychiatrists, psychologists, MDs of all varieties, Christian ministers, and lay leaders from various professions. The air was almost electric with expectation, and I realized how much the conference guests were looking forward to hearing this man whose books they had read. Many of the guests had traveled hundreds of miles for this weekend. We had turned out a number of requests to attend, and still the group had overflowed into the motel in the nearest town. As we all gathered for the first session, I wondered how well Turnier would be able to cross the language barrier from his French through an interpreter to us. I had no idea what content to expect. And then he began to speak. Within 5 minutes, the room had faded, and we were transported into another world. A little boy was describing his struggle with loneliness and self-doubt almost 60 years before in a country several thousand miles away. You could have heard a pin drop on the stone floor. I sat behind the speaker near the huge fireplace and looked past Paul Turnier into the eyes of almost 100 sophisticated American professionals. Inside those eyes, wide open, I could see a room full of other lonely little boys and girls reliving their own struggles for identity and worth. After 15 or 20 minutes had passed, a strange thing began to happen, something I have never seen happen before or since. As Paul spoke in French, we found ourselves nodding in agreement and understanding before his words were translated. We trusted him so much and felt he understood us so well that we knew at a subconscious level we would resonate with what he was saying. He described problems, doubts, joys, meanings, fears, many of which still existed for him, and spoke of them naturally as if they were materials God normally worked with in his healing ministry among all people, Christians included. Before us was a man who did not even speak our language, a man in his 60s who wore a wrinkled tweed suit and was exhausted from a whirlwind trip across America. And yet as he spoke, fatigue, age, clothes, and language difference all faded into the background. He turned periodically to make eye contact with those of us behind him. I was mainly conscious of his sparkling eyes, his personal transparency, and a glow of genuine caring about his face. As he spoke, I felt and heard love and the truth of God about my own life. I found myself having to fight back tears, tears of relief and gratitude and release from my solitary burden. Because of my own struggles, I had sensed that to be healed, we need more than good medical advice or even excellent psychological counseling. We need presence. Vulnerable, personal presence. I knew the Bible claimed that was what God gave us in Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit, his own presence to heal and to strengthen us. And I had felt that somehow we Christians were to be channels to convey that healing presence personally to other people's lives through our own openness and vulnerability. But in Paul Turnier, I met at last a living model of the kind of communication I was trying in a stumbling, uncertain way to find. If you read the story of this Paul Turnier's life, it's quite an interesting story. He was born when his father was 70. And after he was born, I think his father only lived 6 months. And this boy, and then 6 years later, his mother died and he grew up in an orphanage. Did you know that most of the people who have made a significant impact on the earth did not have normal beginnings? There are many, many of the world leaders were either orphans or had missed one parent or had some kind of disadvantage. And that's the way Paul was. And so if you're sitting here this morning and you feel disadvantaged in some way, I know some of you personally. Like Daryl doesn't have a mother anymore. And you don't have a father anymore. And I don't know about the rest of you. There's other people who have problems. I mean, all of us have some kind of problems. And either we have the choice of being pressed down by those problems or to use those problems to connect with other people who have problems so that we become ways that all of us can deal with our problems in redemptive ways. There's a spiritual dimension to this that you can hear what I'm saying, but to be actually able to do this, the Spirit of God has to move in your heart to be able to do this. But listen, brothers and sisters, this is what you're called to do as a teacher. I know that we teachers, we have to maintain some kind of professional distance. I know that. And you cannot be pals with your little boys and girls. But there's a certain sense in which an older person, even though has professional distance, to be open and vulnerable and to let them know, your little boys and girls know, that you have problems and you're dealing with problems. But that's okay. Everybody has problems. And I'm here to help you deal with your problems. You don't act like a doctor and do all the diagnosis and all that kind of stuff. But if you learn how to be as transparent and as much of a person as you can be, you automatically translate that into your boys and girls. And that will be the largest gift you can ever give them. What do we mean? When I read this, I had this book in my library for years, and I read that. And I collect books along the way. So I went to my library just to see, because I thought, you know, I picked up some books on Turnier in the past, and lo and behold, I had four of them that I'd never read. And after a while, I began to buy up every book I could find by this man. Here's one of his main books called The Meaning of Persons, and I would like to read just a little bit. This man, he did some work with... He was a doctor. He was recognized on both sides of the ocean. But he was a very unusual kind of doctor. And he dealt with people that you and I don't usually bump into. Just reading something here. I have come to see you because I'm looking for life. The visitor who greets me with those words is a man about whom the most striking thing is the friendliness that seems to radiate from his face. He explains to me that he has just come from the house of a friend who represents his country in the United Nations organization. A brilliant reception was in progress there, and the house was thronging with all the important international figures of Geneva. He gives me a vivid and penetrating description of it, behind the bowing and the smiles, behind the friendly words, the witticisms, the empty phrases, and even in their silences and their aloofness, all were playing a cautious game. Each sought to dissemble his own real thoughts, his secret intentions, while trying to unmask those of his neighbor. It was not only a matter of diplomatic intrigues, there were also sentimental maneuvers going on too, and those subtle tactics in which we all constantly indulge in order to consolidate our prestige and give to others the desired impression. These various purposes combined and interacted as each pursued his own ends. Everything was studied. Dress, jewels, handshake, subject to conversation. The servants played their part with a proper impassibility. The host displayed all the attentiveness demanded by the occasion. All these people meet frequently together in various fashionable drawing rooms, and the game goes on and develops. Among them all exists a tacit understanding which they scrupulously observe. What a farce! Exclaims my visitor. But he is able to denounce it so lucidly because he himself is conscious of the fact that he is constantly playing a part, as much to himself as to others. He suffers from it to the point of obsession. I'm looking for life! And he adds, I'm not living a real life at all! The agony of it has pursued him everywhere, year after year. There is nothing in all that but a facade, a caricature, a mere appearance of life. His memories pour out, full of that agonizing impression of meeting, not men, but more or less artificial personages. And the worse agony of feeling that he is himself caught up in the game so that he can never be spontaneous, simple, and true. On rare occasions have I succeeded, he says, when I have been in love, And even then, the spell was broken almost at once because I realized it was not really love I was looking for, but life. Love is just one more pretense. And in order to keep even that, my words and attitudes had to be carefully calculated. I had to play the game of love in the way the woman expected me to give way to her whims in order to please her, or else she had to follow mine in order not to lose me. And so life escapes us just when we think it's in our grasp. Suddenly, he breaks off. "You're making me feel nervous," he says to me. "How do you mean?" "Yes, you are. For the last moment or two, I've been saying just anything but what I wanted to say to you." What feeling had I momentarily experienced? It was probably quite unconscious, because I was full of sympathy for that man, his search for life, and deeply interested in what he was saying. Perhaps the very fact that he was able to express so well things that I too am aware of had caused some subtle movement of envy in me. In any case, with his quick intuition, he had sensed the breaking of that personal contact of which we were speaking just now, and which is the prerequisite of life, spontaneity, and communion. But the contact was reestablished from the moment he had the courage to tell me that I was making him nervous. How fragile a thing we see the genuine fellowship to be. For an ordinary life, it's impossible always to be laying bare one's heart. One has to enclose it in protective armor. Do you see how sensitive this whole thing is? I'm conscious that while I'm sharing this thing to you, you're going to get glimpses of this thing and it'll pull back. But that's okay, as long as you can get some glimpses of it. Now, there was one other page I wanted to read in here. Here's the problem. We're all teachers here. The problem is we know that school is a molder. You pour little children in the mold from the top, and the school's supposed to mold them into whatever shape we're supposed to mold them, right? Okay. That's many times too true. But I would like to say that the shape and size of those little candles or plasters or whatever we're pouring into may be missing a huge, important dimension. It's not about all the little stuff we're supposed to add to our little repertoire of how we're supposed to act and talk and do things like he was talking about here. But part of what we need to pour into those little children is a glimpse or to shape them somehow to be free to be themselves. Now, how is that best done? Can I teach you here how to do this? What do you think? Can I teach you? I can say some things about it, but this thing is so elusive, it's hard for me to actually communicate with words. And that's why I feel I need the presence of the Holy Spirit of God here to communicate that. When we come together Teachers Week here, we understand we're supposed to put on our teacher persona and we're supposed to do the teacher stuff, okay? But I'm going to say, the less we can do that and the more we can just be ourselves, who we are, the better. And if I can help you to go back into your classrooms and think about how you can take all the stuff you've heard and use it as tools, but remember that the very best thing you can do for your students is just simply be the person that you're supposed to be. That you don't play all these games of acting like anybody else. I said in one of my other classes, when I taught 1 year, I was a young, dumb teacher, and so I had a chance to talk with a man who had taught for 47 years. I said, "What advice do you have for me?" And he said, "Be yourself." Best advice I ever got. So don't you dare go home from Faith Builders and try to be like that teacher, or like that teacher, or like that. Wow. Have you ever seen anybody try to copy somebody else? What do you think about that? Is that good? It stinks, doesn't it? You know what you're all saying in your hearts? I have a problem liking my own self. Why would anybody else appreciate me? I know what that is. It's scary for a person just to be themselves. Because we're always afraid people are not going to like who we really are. But you know what I've discovered? I've discovered that people receive me best if I am truly authentic with who I am. I think the same thing is true for you. So take courage. People will like you if you are just the way you are. Now, I realize that saying that is both scary and comforting at the same time. The person who we really are springs forth spontaneously, cannot be called forth by request or demand. It's just genuinely living. Now I'm going to tell you my own personal story. My supreme need was to find God, and I'll explain why as I get down through here. But your supreme need is to find God too. So already we have a connection point. Okay, so I'm going to tell my story, and it would be nice. I would love to hear your stories of how this is working out in your life. But God tailor makes a program for you and me to find him. There's a hand that reaches down, and our hands are all reaching up. And for too many people, those hands never come together. But I want you to reach up. I know God is reaching down, and you put those two together, then you really got something. Okay? So I'm going to tell you my story of reaching up to that hand that reached down. I tend to be stiff and concerned what people think about me. I'm a little bit more cultured and refined than my wife. My wife is less cultured. Her name is Barbara, but she's more spontaneous than I am. And that has been a huge gift to me. I try to be perfect. I'm not very perfectionistic, but I try to be perfect. But Barbara is just herself. What you see is what you get. Now, I was involved with sexual abuse when I was young, and the resulting shame from that killed my personhood. His shame took me into unbelievable spiritual isolation and unbelievable pain and loss. Now, put that along with, I went to a public school for all 12 years of my life. So the confusion and difficulty that was inside me was horrendous. That's saying it mildly. We lived on a farm, and I became a farm worker. But I was intellectually impoverished. We worked hard. But I was at least somewhat normal, and I became very pure conscious, even while I realized I was somewhat of a social outcast because I had all these problems that I was struggling with. And I identified with my church. I was not a rebellious sort of person. And in fact, I identified with my church so much, I became an agent of the organization. I spoke the party line. I guess really what I was seeking was some kind of identity. At age 12, I was baptized. I chose Christ because I didn't want to go to hell, that's all. I had no intention of being godly, committing my life to servanthood to Jesus Christ. When I was in instruction class, I hated it. I had no interest. I just didn't want to go to hell. So I got baptized. When I got baptized, I thought, you know, I better straighten up here. This isn't really great. But then 2 years later, the Lord met me in a way that I cannot even explain to you at age 14. And he began to do some things inside me. And this is the tailor-made thing for me. I went into a path of legalism and all that. Even though I had some Bible teaching, I didn't know how to put all this together. But I was so bound up with my personal problems, my shame, my work, myself, that the person within me was almost completely stifled. And believe it or not, in that condition, I was asked to teach school. A year later, I got married. During my fourth year of teaching, I realized that teaching was me. But I wasn't rehired. I milked cows for 9 months. And I realized that milking cows, this is not me. But one thing happened. Several things happened in that nine-month period. I was just doing my job. And one day, my boss asked me, "What are you doing to the cows?" Because their production was going up. "Well, I just did what I thought you're supposed to do, feed them." And lo and behold, you know, they increased their production. I wasn't trying to compete with anything. I was just doing my job. But the important thing is, my person came through. My boss somehow saw something. He commented about it, but it gave me a sense of, you know, I can do something. Now, my wife, in the context of her personality, and she's not a psychiatrist, she's not even trained in any of that, but she's one of the most guileless persons you'll ever meet. And I don't know how this all came together, that we got together, but she began to peel the layers of personage from me. She was simply operating out of her personhood without being trained in it. But she was desperately seeking my person underneath all this stuff. And along with that, school did a wonderful number on my personhood. Somewhere along the line, and again, this is a divine work of God. I somehow knew that I did not want to just, quote, pretend and do the acting part, be something I was not. Maybe it's because I was living with my wife. But and this is what's so wonderful about teaching. These little children come to you, and when they're in first grade, they don't have too much personage attached to themselves yet. But the older they grow, the more they get. But even in seventh and eighth grade, they don't have everything that they're going to get in life as far as all the personage stuff. But as I encountered the persons in my students, it strengthened the person in me. Since students don't usually have much personage to hide, they're real persons. My person responded to theirs. And school became a delight to me. Let me suggest to you that when you get to this level where you get to be delighted with the persons and your students, you will not need to force yourself or drag your feet out the door to go to school anymore. You'll want to go meet those persons in your class. And this is the way God has designed this, that when you meet those persons, it will do something to your own person. It's a back and forth thing that if it works right, everybody is benefited. And you can't help but be a better person as you respond to that. Now, I'm going to skip over some things in my life too. Just 2 years ago, after I was in Indiana, the third year I was in Indiana, God sent three gifts to my classroom. Their names were Henier, Tanya, and Christopher. And I could spend time telling you their stories. I don't want to take too much time here. But Henier and Tanya were from the island of, they're from the country of Dominican Republic. They only knew English. They had only come to the States 7 weeks before school started, so they had almost no English. You can imagine what that's like. And Christopher K. came as a problem boy who didn't have a father, and he was seeking an identity. But nobody will ever be able to take away from me what happened in that year. It was one of the best years of my teaching. When you look into the eyes of a 17-year-old boy, a scared boy who has an abusive background, in a new country, new language, new church, new school, new everything, and he's looking at you with big pleading eyes, like he would never say it, but I need somebody. That cannot help but bring the best out of a person. And God goes to work. And his sister was just the opposite. She was as mean and as rude as anything. But whenever Grace went to work and she began to open up, she was at first so conscious of what other people thought about her. But when Grace went to work in her heart, then after a while, she became the model for the other students in the class as far as pursuing their own studies. And I wish I had her here. She would be tremendously embarrassed. But I'd like to show you what God does in a person within 2 years. Just amazing. Christopher was a little bit different story. Huge identity problems. But again, grace goes to work. And one of the biggest gifts you can give to any boy and girl in your class is to recognize who they are as a person. And I discovered that this boy simply needs an identity. He hasn't had a father in his life. And we discovered this boy is a barrel of fun. That's who he is. So when he does his fun, we laugh with him, and it gives him significance. Now, I know he tends to take it too far. But one day, I realized that he was working for a neighboring farmer, and this is still intrigues me. This farmer lets him drive out on a public road with $500,000. He's the only person there. Big tractors, dual wheels with huge equipment on the back, going up Michigan 66. I just drove my car behind him, and I watched him swing out for the mailboxes, come to the bridge, wait for the oncoming traffic to come through, get into the field. I went, got out of my car, got into the cab with him, and he's driving down from the field. Wow, he's a person here. And I have the privilege to affirm him in his personhood. I share his personhood with him. It does wonderful things for him. But I'm not in school. That's okay. My job is to affirm you as a person. And if I would work with you folks, that would be my main job with every one of you, to affirm your personhood, that you are significant and valued as a person. It took me 4 years of teaching to even decide that I was a teacher. I don't know where you are in your story, but my guess is that some of you might be still scared in your hearts. You're not sure if this is where you should be. Well, God has interesting ways of confirming all that. But just maybe, if you can discover your personhood and you become comfortable with that, God can keep you in the classroom a long time. Just maybe. I had a boy last year. He was coming into my class, and this boy had problems, and I needed to reach his person. And the way we did it was we did an art project that all the girls had to suffer through last year because I was trying to reach one person. And we were going to do a leather project. And, of course, it's fun to work with leather that's cured and all that. But why not learn where leather comes from? So I told the students they all had to skin and cure a small animal. And then they had to also cure a large animal skin. So they could do a roadkill. They could shoot something. Or they get their brothers to shoot something, you know, do a rabbit skin or a raccoon or some other kind of small animal. And then, of course, it was deer season, and it was real easy to get deer hides and so on. Oh, some of the girls. But this boy, his name is Shane. He was in his element. He had lots of skins. He had, I don't know how many squirrel skins he had at his house. Well, we had open house. And everybody's going to bring their skins that they had. But he had a 4x8 piece of plywood with all kinds of skins on it. All I did was affirm his person. And you know what? His behavior improved. He didn't have to goof off and do attention-getting stuff because he was already recognized for who he is. That was last year. This year, I have a boy coming in my class who is struggling. I didn't do very well with him last year. I didn't reach his person last year. I concentrated on one of his classmates. It took me a year to figure this boy out. And this summer, I had the opportunity of getting a new printer, and I couldn't get it to work. I got it at a yard sale, and I gave it to this boy. He has this reputation of fixing stuff. He got my printer, and he just did whatever boys do with printers, and it works. I am so pleased with him. I have shaken his hand. I gave him money for it, and he's just beaming and beaming. So I'm hoping I have a foothold for his boy whenever we go into school this year. But, you know, his penmanship is awful. His spelling is awful. And he does stuff just to... You know how it is. But my job isn't to correct all that stuff. My job is to affirm him as a person. Okay? Now, my guess is you have people at your school just like that, with their own stories. So meet them where they are. Now, for me as a boy, as a man, you know, I can relate to the boys that way. And I guess you girls, you relate to the girls that way. And maybe, just maybe, there's some other people in your school that you can help with the other side to develop that. But we got to meet them somewhere, somehow. Now, I would like to spend the rest of the time, look at your handout there. The job of the school is to nurture each person, to get beneath the personages. The personages are the stuff that they put on the outside that actually covers up and masks the real person. Learn to know the real person and then nurture that. And number two, make it safe for each person to manifest himself or herself. Some people, it's just real easy to do this. And other people, people who have been pushed down and abused in some way, it's very difficult to reach them. And there are some people who have, some students that have such a protection of personage around them, they may not even allow you to penetrate it. I had some boys in ninth grade. You know, when you're into literature, literature is all about ideas and dealing with life issues and so on. I could sit there and talk to those ninth grade boys and ask them the questions in the literature book, and they were determined not to let me see what was in their real hearts. That's a boy problem. Girls aren't usually that way. Okay. Some of these same boys, we're supposed to be practicing for a school program. Public. Well, they're into this idea that it's cool not to, you know, boys don't sing. Okay? That's a girl thing. But we're going to do all boys. The girls are going to do all girls songs. And the girls can do all girls songs. They want to go practice, and they do well with that. But boys, it's a different story. So you know how boys do. They goof off, and they say stuff, and they kick each other, and, you know, the whole thing. And I was over there. I was using all the tricks in my bag to get those boys to get on with their thing. I ran out of tricks. My bag got empty. So I said, okay, boys, we're having this program. You're allowed to stand up here and make fools out of yourself if you want to. You know? And I think that was like a day before or 2 days before the program. And so they just suddenly kicked in, and they did it. And I think it impressed the whole assembly. What in the world? You mean these boys are doing this? Well, suddenly because they cared and they did what it took. They knew in their heart of hearts that this is what they wanted to do, but it wasn't cool to do it. I don't like to relate to people like that. I don't. It makes me angry to relate to boys who will not expose themselves, will not let me penetrate. But I sure love it whenever some people open up and they talk. If I would have you day after day, I'm at a disadvantage. When I teach Calvary Bible School, the teaching class, were you in my teaching class? Donna, were you in my teaching class? You were, Chris. Okay. A teacher has three relationships. He has a relationship with a subject. He has to know what he's talking about. He has a relationship with his style on how he does it himself, his own personal. And he has a relationship with his students. So part of that class is, in order for me to talk to them about teaching, I have to know who they are. And look at this. I don't know who you are. I know Chris, because he's been in my class, and I know Donna a little bit, and I've learned to know Dina back there, and Daryl's my nephew, so I know some of you. But in order to minister to you effectively, I have to know you. Here I am, a stranger to many of you, up here trying to communicate to strangers, and it's not the best. Okay? But if we could spend time together month after month, then I learn to know you really well, and you get to know me really well. And that, if we are open with each other, then powerful things begin to happen between us. You grow, and I grow. That's one of the wonderful things of teaching. Do you know that teaching is the highest paying job you'll ever do? Not in terms of money, but you get a chance to invest yourselves in the lives of other people. There's a little lady sitting back here by the name of Sarah. I am just thoroughly looking forward. She's going to be my co-teacher next year. Thoroughly looking forward to this, Sarah. You were in my teaching class. Why didn't you raise your hand? Oh, Sarah. One of the worst things that can happen at a school is if there's an adversarial school environment. This thing of meeting persons does not happen in an adversarial environment. And some students, I'm sorry, will stonewall themselves, and they will not let you through. What are you going to do about that? Sometimes there's nothing you can do except try. And the good thing is that if there's some people you can break through with, and they see that they're actually missing out on something, that they might let themselves come through a little bit. If you have an adversarial school experience, all you do is nurture personages. You teach the students how to put extra layers on to keep the real person from being encountered. That's bad. It's a very poor foundation for life. But a teacher, rather, must believe in every student and reach every student's person. And you never say this. If a child is a liar, you don't call him a liar, because he'll certainly be a liar after that. You gave him identity, and he will live up to his identity. If you have a student who is, quote, stupid, you never say stupid. He will live up to that. He will be stupid. But if you can nurture them as a person, you can believe in them. And this boy, my fix-it boy, I'm just going to be concentrating on that this coming year. This is my man. Anything goes wrong, this is my man. I'm just dreaming of the possibilities here. Better move on. 50 years ago, statistics were that 7% of Americans thought for themselves. 50 years ago. Do you think that has improved or gone down? It's going way down. And so, out there in the general American public, people don't think for themselves. Who thinks for them?
The advertisers.
Mm-hmm. The media. The media does their thinking for them. And all they do is watch the advertisements and listen to the media explaining everything. The pundits making their value judgments. And yeah, they absorb all that. Okay? The job of the school is not only to teach children what to think, but how to think and to resist all that. And you know, in some of this peer stuff that goes on, young people don't think for themselves. They just do stuff. For example, this bugs me. You know, it's kind of hot around here today, or outside. It's not in here right now. I'm teaching Northern Indiana. This is especially true of places where there's large Mennonite populations. But it gets to be cool to wear many layers of clothing. I don't know if that's the way it is in your school or not, okay? It's the layered effect. So it's fun to ask the girls, why do you have so many clothes on when it's hot? It doesn't make any sense. You tell me why they do it. It's cool. Oh. But you know, young people don't want to come to terms with things like that. But if we can at least get them to look through the stupidity of some of this pure stuff, just maybe they will think for themselves. Just maybe. Do any of you have a story of something like that? Susan Wise Bauer, she's a writer. She wrote The Well-Trained Mind. She has a theory, and I agree, that students who are free and able to express themselves verbally in writing and in speaking have no need for rebellion, for studs, for tattoos, or for mohawks or other strange behavior. Now, Mennonite boys and girls don't get tattoos, they don't get studs, they don't get mohawks, but they do other kinds of stupid stuff. Merlin, why are you grinning? What stupid stuff are you thinking about? Tell us one thing.
Well, the layer is one thing.
So that's at your school too.
It can be hot in the classroom where it's wet.
What's another one?
Someone. Dyed hair.
Dyed hair? A Mennonite school? Dyed hair? That's cool, isn't it?
He didn't do it very well, though.
But that didn't matter. He's at least cool, right? Yes.
Untied shoes. Two students in the whole school.
Untied shoes.
And yet it was cool, and yet most of the students didn't think it was, but two did.
So what'd you do about that?
I told them they had time.
Yeah, we got safety issues going on here, too.
Because then you run in the soccer field, and they fall off, and
yeah. Well, that does bring attention. But that brings attention, right? Now, we do have some school rules. Like right now, one of the cool things to do is boys let their shirt tails hang out, right? Back in the 60s, that was the exact opposite. Nobody had their shirt tail out. But it's the cool thing now to have your shirt tail hanging out. And your school might have a rule. Not my boys had that problem. My school board finally said they have to have them in. And if they don't, we expect you to deal with it rather firmly. And so, you know, we did our thing, but the unkempt look is a part of what's cool out there. And for some reason, it comes in here. It must be that we're picking up some cues from out there. We're picking up some values out there. And that's bad business. Bad. We're not going to gain anything that way. The other thing is the baggy pants and no belts. How many of you at your school, they have to wear a belt? Good. The rest of you don't have to. Don't know? Do you have any problem with baggy pants at your school? Yes. And you're probably not the only one. But why do they want their underwear to show? It's cool. Who says it's cool? Out there says it's cool. And somehow we're listening to out there and we think it's cool too. But it's really, really stupid. Now, we hope it'll pass and after a while they'll come up with some other stupid idea. But in the meantime, so, the way to deal with this, if you can help students know who they are and write and speak who they are, then they don't need to have their underwear showing. That's a huge privilege. Students will forever love the teacher who introduced them to themselves. Did you get that? Students will forever love the teacher who introduced them to themselves. In fact, that's the greatest gift you can give your students, introducing them to themselves. Laboring to liberate a crushed life is laboring with God to set a person free. When children are one way at school and another way at home, in other words, they're two different people, then the person is absent. For example, you might have a child who is lazy, argumentative and silent and unapproachable at home. But he comes to school, this little girl is sweet, and she's diligent, and she's chatty, and she's companionable, and all that. Got problems going on here. Her person is absent. She's only going to be a person when she's the same both places. The personality must be unified if a person is present. And our job as a teacher is to bring those two together. If you teach upper graders, you teach them to speak publicly, right? Why do people not like to speak publicly?
Self-conscious.
Now, why are they self-conscious?
When they speak, it reveals their inside.
Yeah. They reveal themselves. And everybody tends to be scared that if I speak, people will not like what they see. And so, fear to speak in public is evidence that a personage is operating, not a person. And so, if we can help our students to come to terms with who they are, that frees them then to speak in public. And not only to speak in public, when a person speaks in public, if he can get past the fear of standing up in front, what is one of the hardest things to do? Those of you who have spoken up front, you girls never really have to deal with this one in a public way outside of school, but what's everybody afraid of as a public speaker?
Failure.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, what people think of us is, pardon? Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to make myself clear. Pardon? Where? Their eyes. When you grade public speaking, you grade them on eye contact, right? Why don't people like to look in other people's eyes?
It's intense.
Maybe. Exactly. The eyes are the window to the soul. Our time goes soon to be up. A good way to nurture a person is for the student to have a birthday. What can you do when a student has a birthday to nurture their person?
I was buying helium balloon and put tied to their desk when they
come in. Mm-hmm. Giving them significance in some way. And you're going to have to do this in the context of your own personality and setting. But give that birthday person personal significance. In our school, at the beginning of the week, we find all the people in the school that have birthdays that week, and then we stand up them one by one, and the whole school looks at them and sings to them. And if they're in my room, they have to present three goals that they're going to try to accomplish that year. Now, if you're in Sister Sarah's room, you don't have to do that, but, unless she wants them to. But we got to find some way to give them significance. And if they make a really worthwhile goal, wow, what a good goal. I'd like to help you meet that goal. But if they say they want to win in softball, at least said something. I ignored. I had a girl, I won't say her name, but the way she related to me in school was she was rude to me, but she didn't know she was being rude. And so instead of saying, stop being rude to me, I just said, why are you being rude to me? She would look at me. The last thing she thought she was rude. But all I did was force her to connect with her behavior for what it really was. And there are many, many students who are out of contact with what they're doing. And I just need to bring them up short, help them see themselves for who they are. All schools have some kind of spirit, and students who feel good about us, the school, evidence personhood. Okay, in conclusion, I would just like to emphasize, and you have a few weeks before school, and you have all school year, if the Lord tarries. The most important thing I have to say to you, I've been saying throughout, but I want you to put it down on paper if you haven't written it down yet, is that you as a teacher must be a person. Like begets like. When the teacher is a person, he's able to nurture personhood. So talk to the Lord about that if you're struggling in anything. And he has a tailor-made program as to how he can work that out in your particular experience. I think we'll just stop right there. Thank you very much for your attention. It was a pleasure to relate to you today. You're excused.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.